It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. I've always been a fan of actress Judy Holliday, but it was only recently as I began researching this segment that I read that Ms. Holliday was only 43 years old when she died of breast cancer in 1965. The list of what she accomplished in her short life is truly amazing, including an Academy Award for Best Actress in the film version of Born Yesterday. She also won a Golden Globe and a Tony Award. Her on-screen stage persona was that of a dumb blonde, if you will. But in her real life, Judy Holliday had a genius IQ and so much more going on below the surface. These details are the inspiration for a new production called Smart Blonde, which has its official world premiere at City Theater this Friday. It runs through December 21st. And I'm joined now in Studio A by the creators of this musical look at the life of Judy Holliday, playwright Willie Holtzman. Willie, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
And artistic director Tracy Brigden. Tracy, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks so much.
How long have you been working on this, Willie? I understand it's been a long time.
I've been working on the play for just a couple of years, but I go back with Judy's story 30 years when I wrote a biography about her life. So I circled back. I stopped being a biographer, became a playwright, and Tracy was generous enough to give me the chance to write it for City Theater.
And I understand that you two, there was a point at which part of how this idea germinated was out of a conversation that you both had.
We did. We did Willie's play, The Marienstraat, a few years ago at City. And we loved his play and loved Willie so much, we said we have to get him back here. So I asked him to write a play specifically for City Theater. And we had a chat about all the subjects, and he had a bunch of different ideas. But once, like you, once he told me Judy's full story, which I didn't know, I said, I want everyone to know this because she was such an extraordinary woman.
She truly was. And I guess I go back 30 years when I saw my first Judy Holliday film, which it was actually Jack Lemmon's first film, and it's hard to say the name. It's the PHFFT, which is it refers to a marital breakup that they happen to be married. I don't want to spoil the ending for anybody, but they get back together at the end. But in the meantime, it's is what happened. And she's so delightful in that movie and the comedy. I mean, 50s comedies can be so just archaic and just not funny. And this was intelligent and hilarious, and it was a reflection of who she was as a performer.
There was always that layer of intelligence under any characterization. And she was generally cast in working class roles, and so played not particularly educated, literate people. But that brilliance shone through everything she did. She made another movie with Jack Lemmon called "It Should Happen to You."
Yeah, right.
Did you see that one?
Of course.
Yeah. So they when I was researching the book, Jack was very eager to talk about Judy, and managed to empty a bottle of Cabernet during our interview. So he was very open and very just tremendous affection for her.
Well, and it was one of those things that I didn't realize it was his first film till I was researching this segment. I'm thinking, my God, to make your debut and have her as your co-star would have been an amazing thing.
He said she couldn't have been more generous on the set because he was a bag of nerves and they were ready to fire him. So she relaxed him and made sure he had all the most flattering scenes and shots, and something that's not at all typical in Hollywood.
No, a lot of actresses would have probably had no time for that and upstaged him and maybe ruined his career for all we know.
Exactly.
So that says a lot about Judy Holliday, but what else do we need to know about who was Judy Holliday? Because there were probably a lot of people in this day and age who still don't really know much about her.
Well, I think one of the great things about the play is that it's really a universal story in certain ways because the play is about a woman finding her voice in the world. And especially in that era when women in show business didn't really have a voice a lot of the time, Judy was amazing because she fought to do what she wanted to do. She didn't really get to break out of the dumb blonde role in her films, but she did do some other amazing things that are scenes in the play.
And tell us about the actress who will be playing Judy Holliday.
Well, we're blessed. Andrea Burns, she's a Broadway actress. She's brilliant. It's almost frightening the way she seems to channel Judy at times in the play. And then what she brings of her own actress craft and sensibility to the role, better than I ever could have hoped for.
Lucky. Of course, Judy's voice is very famous. She's mm-hmm. famous for that little squeaky high voice. And Andrea just absolutely does it, a dead-on impersonation of Judy's voice. And Andrea also has an amazing singing voice herself. And there's a lot of standards in the show from that era that Andrea and the other actors sing beautifully.
Right. That's something that's what Judy Holliday started out as, was as a singer. She was part of an act. And then later had a chance to do Broadway, and then her role in Born Yesterday led to her being cast in the film, although I understand she wasn't necessarily the first choice.
Oh, she might have been the fifth choice after Lucille Ball and Barbara Stanwyck and Harry Cohn, who ran Columbia, was not at all eager to cast her. He kept referring to her as that fat Jewish broad. But he became so devoted to her and later in her career, when she gave up films, he was desperate to get her back.
And she played, of course, the dumb blonde role, both on Broadway and in film, in comedies like Born Yesterday and Bells Are Ringing and The Solid Gold Cadillac. Did she end up getting typecast, in a sense?
She did, and I think it's the heart and soul of the play is when she ran into political problems. And was subpoenaed and had to testify before a Senate committee about her political affiliations. She was blacklisted. And the only way she could go back to work is if she agreed to play those roles she had been playing as an actress. And as a woman, she was desperate to break out of that and to play more complex characters. She said she just wanted to play a character where she could have her own hair and her own brain. And, with her political problems, worked against that.
Why did they want her – why was it stipulated that she had to stick with that persona?
There were people who were blacklisted and never went back to work. And then there are those who were bought back into the business, essentially. There were fixers and what they call clearance men. So Judy had been blacklisted. She her name appeared in Red Channels, and Harry Cohn and Columbia used the fixers and clearance men to buy her off the blacklist. And the price he insisted on is that she play more of the same roles that she was playing.
And she played them well. And in Born Yesterday, of course, she played the memorable character of Billy Dawn. We have a clip from that. Of her performance in that movie that earned her the Academy Award. And we're going to hear her now with her co-star in that movie, William Holden.
Now, what didn't you understand?
Well, like the name of it. The Yellowing Democratic Manifesto.
Simple.
To who? Whom? Who? Well, anyway, not to me.
Well, look, you know what yellowing means.
Not this time.
Well, when a piece of paper gets old, what happens to it?
Thrown away?
No, it turns yellow.
It does?
Of course.
What do you know?
Now, Democratic, you know what that means, don't you?
Not Republican.
Well, not exactly. It means, well, it just means pertaining to our form of government, which is a democracy.
What's pertaining?
Has to do with.
Pertaining. Nice word.
All right. Manifesto.
I don't know.
Why didn't you look it up?
I did look it up. I still don't know.
And that's Judy Holliday with William Holden in the movie Born Yesterday. She won the Academy Award for the role she played there, Billy Dawn. And in the competition when she was nominated, I mean, she was up against Gloria Swanson. This is 1950, so Gloria Swanson had just done Sunset Boulevard.
Yes. And Bette Davis.
Bette Davis and I mean
Ann Baxter, both in All About Eve.
And she won.
And there's a great scene in the play of her winning the Oscar, sitting in New York with Gloria Swanson, because they were both in Broadway shows. And Gloria's reaction when she doesn't win is something to behold.
I should point out the logistics of our cast. We have Andrea and two wonderful actors, Adam Heller and Jonathan Brody. And so Gloria is played by one of the guys. And to a fare thee well, as they say.
Interesting. We're talking with playwright Willie Holtzman, whom you just heard, and also artistic director Tracy Brigden, of the musical Smart Blonde, which is premiering this week. The official premiere is at City Theater on Friday, and the show runs through December 21st. It's based on the extraordinary life of the actress Judy Holliday, known for playing dumb blondes, but who had a genius IQ. So I want to go back to when she's called up before the Senate committee. They were referred to, and probably accurately so, as communist witch hunts conducted largely by the late senator from Wisconsin, the junior senator, as Edward R. Murrow often liked to refer to him, Joseph McCarthy, who was intent on tracking down and identifying any and all people who were known members, in his words, of the Communist Party, who might be spying on behalf of Russia or some Eastern Bloc country in those paranoid days of the 1950s. A number of actors and actresses were called before that committee and blacklisted. What was it that Judy Holliday had done? Was there any – had she been involved with some socialist organization at some point in her life?
I think she'd been involved with every socialist organization. She was raised – the only daughter of Lower East Side socialists who were very politically involved were Russian immigrants. And so that was her background, just a tradition of social justice. And so when you mentioned the Cabaret Act she had, her first job in show business, her friends in the act were Adolph Green, Betty Comden, and at the piano, somebody named Lenny, at the time, Bernstein, later to become Lenny Bernstein. And so they couldn't get any paying gigs, and they often played labor rallies and events that Adolph usually booked. So a lot of those organizations appeared under her name in Red Channels. And so it was something she had done, coming up in the business in the 30s. And so for this to become an issue before a Senate subcommittee in 1952 was not terribly relevant. And it's hard to see how she might have posed a threat to the American way of life. But,
part of the way that the Senate committee was justifying its existence.
Yeah, it was show trial. Her parents had been in the party. Virtually all her friends had at one time been in the Communist Party, although she never joined. And she was determined not to give names. So that's I don't know if Tracy would agree, but I think the centerpiece of the play is how she gets out of that room without giving a name.
And I don't want to give away too much of the play, but let's talk about what Judy Holliday does here, because it's a stroke of genius, really. She basically takes her on-screen persona into that Senate hearing and does what?
She really charms her interviewers with her Billy Dawn personality, and she plays dumb. She pretends like she doesn't know that she had any kind of affiliation with anybody who was doing anything wrong, and she admits, I've been stupid. And so she gets off the hook. They're charmed by her and they let her go. But then they turn around and release the testimony anyway, publicly, and that's how she gets blacklisted.
She had one other enormous secret that she took into that room, and I won't say what it was. I hope your listeners will come see the show, but something that in 1950s America was possibly even worse than being said to have been a member of the Communist Party. So she managed to get out of the room without divulging that secret either.
All right. Well, we'll be interested to find out what that is. You have to go see Smart Blonde to find that out. But what did that whole charade, what did that cost her in terms of self-respect?
Certainly, Tracy. She tried her best to just outsmart the interview. But in the end, she had to protect her friends. And so she didn't name names, but she did allow herself to be manipulated once again into playing stupid. And so it was mortifying to her that that's how, when the testimony was released, the world saw her, Judy Holliday, not Billy Dawn, as being a stupid dupe and a sympathetic witness. So it did cost her a lot, and it really affected the second half of her short life.
The blowback was vicious, and I think it contributed to the end of her marriage. She gave birth a short while after her testimony, and before she gave birth, had a call from an anonymous caller who said, "I hope your baby is born dead." I mean, it was that vicious.
And, well, I was going to ask you how this shortened her life and career, but clearly it put a tremendous the blowback from all of this put a tremendous strain on her life.
Undoubtedly.
But part of what happens in the course of the play, because it happened in the course of her life, is that she does have a pretty indomitable spirit, and she soldiers on, and she keeps finding work and making her way. And by the end of the play, she really has found a new calling, which is writing lyrics. And at the end of the play, we are in the studio with her recording songs that she wrote. And so she finds another outlet for her beautiful spirit and creativity.
And that's the recording I believe she made just before she – not long before she died.
That's right.
And she did make it back to Broadway too in 1963. There's an interesting clip. There's not much of the actual real Judy Holliday as herself that you can find. But there is there are clips, and there's one I happen to find from her appearance on as the mystery guest on What's My Line. Mm-hmm. And it was 1963, and you kind of get a sense of who she really was. She's – steps away from the persona in that performance. The last thing I wanted to ask you about before we wrap this up is what music will we hear in this show?
Many of the songs that she recorded for the album she made with her boyfriend, Jerry Mulligan, the jazz saxophonist, and two of the songs that she wrote with Jerry that had never been heard on a stage before. So this is a world premiere not only for the play but for those songs. And I would be terribly remiss if I didn't thank our brilliant director, Peter Flynn, who has been working with us for over 2 years on this and has just done magic in pulling together a very complex play, which happens to have 10 songs in it.
Yeah, and who knows? The world premiere is Friday here in Pittsburgh. Maybe we'll see this on Broadway someday. That's the hope
from
I would
your
get.
Mouth to God's ears.
Well, I want to thank both of our guests for being with us, playwright Willie Holtzman and also artistic director Tracy Brigden, who are the brains behind Smart Blonde, which has its world premiere at City Theater this Friday. It runs through December 21st. We're out of time. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Welcome. Thanks.
Tomorrow on Essential Pittsburgh, actress Isabella Rossellini talks about the one-woman show she's bringing to Pittsburgh, Green Porno. Until then, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.